You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
A new Amnesty International report warns that government climate failures are leaving informal settlement residents literally flooded and forgotten. With major metros facing rising climate-driven flooding, the report accuses authorities of systemic neglect and human rights violations. It is a serious report, and let's get to grips with it with Cassandra Dorasamy from Amnesty International. So, Cassandra, the report is very blunt. Government failures are putting lives at risk. Are you able to tell me which failure is the most severe?
Well, the report situates the vulnerabilities that people are facing in informal settlements as part of the broader housing crisis in South Africa. So the first failure is the failure to adequately deal with the legacy of apartheid spatial planning, to deal with the legacy of colonialism. And as much as those are inherited issues that South Africa has received from its past, successive democratic governments have not been able to adequately deal with the issue. And it's acknowledged in government's own white paper on human settlements that the crisis of housing has gotten worse post-apartheid. So that's the first issue that we look at, is the right to adequate housing, because that frames the vulnerabilities that we speak of. The second is in the context of climate change and increasing flooding that's increasing with intensity and frequency, people living in informal settlements are often left vulnerable because of the poor infrastructure that they have around them. And in those situations, our report looks at instances where government has not responded to people who are in dire crisis because of flooding. And that's why we use the title Flooded and Forgotten, because often people are left to fend for themselves, left to rely on NGOs, and are left feeling forgotten by government.
And we know that flooding is both predictable and recurring. One's got to ask the question why disaster planning has not materially improved.
Well, South Africa has a good framework for disaster management and disaster risk reduction. The issue is then, of course, as we say in so many other law, it's in the implementation and in the lack of coordination at times between different governments, because this disaster risk response requires, it requires social development to be involved, sometimes health, sometimes home affairs. It's so many different departments that need a coordinated response to a disaster, but also the fact that some rains and some flooding doesn't receive a disaster response. And it's those instances that we also focus on, because yes, there are the big moments. There's the 2022 floods. There was the floods in the Eastern Cape earlier this year that led to 100 people dying. And those get a lot of attention and receive quicker responses. But there's also the ordinary, quote unquote, ordinary, regular rains that happen. And people, communities told us, that it's in those moments where they have to fend for themselves and figure out how to manage the situation and don't receive any support from government.
And in that respect, government often blames budget limits. I wonder if your evidence shows if it's a funding problem or just a question of not being able to prioritize correctly.
Well, our report didn't conduct a budget analysis per se, but what we do show in the report is just the incredible vacancy rate. So the lack of human resources that are going into government departments that are part of the response. And linked to that is the budget issue, that there's not enough overall resources, financial, human, technical, to respond to crises. And one of our recommendations is that there is this infusion of both financial and human resources and technical expertise into all areas of government that are responsible for planning and for response, because we need to be proactive at this stage as well. And for that infusion, especially to be in local government that's severely undercapacitated to deal with the response, and local government is often at times at the coalface of responding to disaster.
A short-term response that we read about is temporary relocation areas, but I wonder whether they solve anything or simply entrench new human rights violations.
Well, temporary relocation areas And we refer to it in our report that many partners just refer to them as government-sanctioned informal settlements. And oftentimes people are moved there and left there for years on end. And these are meant to be temporary. They're meant to be for 6 months at a time. They're not intended for people to live there for years on end. And one of the cases we look at was in Etekwini, where people in the 2022 floods were moved to a temporary relocation in Lamontville, and during this year's floods were flooded again. So it was government essentially moving them from one risky area to another risky area. And sadly, in that instance of floods this year, five people died. And when we spoke to the community, they told us the horror of trying to save as many people as they can from across the road who had been moved there. And it's really traumatic, but it says a lot about government's planning efforts and that there needs to be more foresight and more intentionality in the planning that goes into relocating people, not just in the time, which is very important that people spend there, but also in the areas that they have been moved to.
It's not only foresight and intentionality. Surely we need more solid mechanisms to force municipalities to act, often when political will is missing or it's just a simple inadequate response.
And that's so important. It's that accountability. How do we hold governments accountable to their responsibilities and their obligations under the Constitution and other existing laws and mechanisms? And one of the things is that next year is local government elections. How are we as people thinking about this issue of disaster risk management, this issue of planning in the context of climate change as an issue that we need to hold politicians and hold governments accountable to make it an issue that people think about and engage with their officials on ahead of the next local government election?
Just a final one, and apologies, it's a very broad question, but what do you think real climate justice looks like for people in informal settlements beyond the rhetoric that we hear all the time?
I will refer back to what we heard in communities, because I think real justice for them, at least from what we heard, is you know, firstly having safe, adequate housing, and that housing is going to protect them against the elements of flooding and rains, and that whenever it floods, people are not left stranded or having property damaged or losing days of income because they can't leave their home due to the rains, or even children losing days of school because of this. The justice has to be linked to the conditions in which people live, and that starts with adequate housing and climate-resilient housing.
Thank you very much indeed, Cassandra Dorasamy from Amnesty International. I appreciate your time today.